All right, our guest, Jay Widener. We're discussing the alchemy and plasma physics. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Great Cross of Hende and the coming of Ice Age. We're going to continue the alchemy conversation. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to discuss Kubrick and the Apollo moon landings and how that ties into the secret space program. I'm Real Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Real Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Twitter's completely out of control. I expected that tonight with Jay. Our guest is Jay Widener, and we're going to jump into right now the Great Cross of Hende. And his book, The Mysteries of the Great Cross, is one of the great research books that I have read, especially of late, Jay. And what you did in the book and the continents, right? where you jumped around to put all of these pieces to the puzzle together, frightening, but the research got done. And you let me know over the past week that there's some new stuff that you needed to talk about. So let's pick up where the book left off. Where are we?
Well, the book, of course, it talks about this monument in the south of France, which is concerned with the cycles of the sun. And so that got me years ago involved in doing research and on the physics of the sun. Of course, alchemy is also greatly associated with the sun. So there's all these things that were kind of cohabitating the same area. So I was involved in both a kind of a spiritual, metaphysical, and a scientific research of this whole idea of what the sun really is. And I believe these plasma beings that we're talking about come from the sun. They're born out of the sun.
Right.
But anyway, but I've also looked at was these kind of cycles of tree rings and ice core drillings, Paul LaViolette's work, all these different people. And I realized that about every 400 years, our planet gets plunged into an ice age, a mini ice age in the last one, but sometimes they're quite severe. And I began realizing that there were several cycles all coming together at once, a planetary cycle, a Maunder minimum, which is a time when the sunspots begin disappearing, which is happening right now. And we would have the sun, when it begins losing its sunspots, as it is right now, it begins then losing its electromagnetic field, which protects us, which allows more cosmic rays to come in, which causes more earthquake. The cosmic rays excite the Earth as they penetrate the Earth, and they cause earthquakes and volcanoes to suddenly start erupting. And they also excite the water molecules in the air. They pass through and cause clouds to form. And at first, when I saw that we were moving into this area about 8 or 9 months ago, I didn't really think much about it. But then I watched the winter that we just went through in the United States and Canada and Europe. And I realized that, holy cow, you know, this is serious. You know, you're safe down there in Southern California, but for people who are in Montana and Northeast and Canada, they may want to start thinking about moving south, because there is going to be, I believe, a very severe cold wave coming between now and 2030. And I'm pretty sure right on this, every single factor is pointing towards a kind of a very cold period for about 10, 11 years. And I just think that it's something we have to pay attention to. And I think the Cross of Hende is one of the things that it's pointing at. The thing is that you have to understand is that the areas that are going to get really cold are the areas where our food is grown. And that's going to be problematic as we go forward. And here's the other thing, Jimmy, which I cannot understand, is I am not a genius. I can look at these weather charts and these long-term graphs and cycles, and I can see where we're headed. and don't understand why our government doesn't see where we're headed and tell us about it. Instead, they're acting as if we're warming, and I just don't know. I don't think we're warming at all. I think we're going through a cycle where, you know, it snowed 5 times in the Sahara Desert this last winter. Morocco was hit by 4 or 5 different snowstorms. It was so cold in England that they'd never seen a winter like this. Same in Canada. And, you know, I see this and I'm going, you know, should we be concerned, you know, about, you know, the future, where our energy is going to come from, how we're going to be able to keep ourselves warm during what we call the Maunder Minimum, which is where we're headed. And these long-term cycles come and go. I mean, empires disappear during these cycles.
Over and over again.
Yeah, the Roman Empire, the Ming Dynasty, over. And America was formed at the beginning of the warm cycle. So we had this grace period of 300 years of pretty nice weather here in the United States, but the records show that, you know, in the 1400s, this place was a miserable place to be. It was cold. And,
well, you were able to extract some dates through your work off of the Great Cross and how it connected to other information around the planet too as well. It just didn't come off of the Great Cross, but you pulled dates and locations, right?
Oh yeah, we had, you know, there's, you know, there the Great Cross of Hende, of course, tells everybody that, you know, the that you're going to have to go to some place like Peru to escape what's coming. And of course, Peru is at 13 degrees south latitude, a very nice, warm, toasty place to be when the weather gets cold.
Sure.
And, you know, and no one has to worry below, say, 40 degrees, maybe 42 or 43 degrees. Below that, you're fine. So most of the United States is fine. But there's going to be some problematic areas. And like I said, most of the areas that are going to get hit also grow the wheat and the corn and have our animal products and that kind of thing. So we're in for a period of time where scarcity is going to come, and I think people need to start prepping for that. Maybe not where you live, but in other places, like build a greenhouse and start growing some of your own food. Food prices are going to go up, and things like that. It's going to get more and more difficult to plant the crops because the cold is going to come in and last longer and then come in earlier. So I would look for a very cold fall in parts of the United States. There's nothing you can really do about it. It's just a natural cycle.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I agree with you. Live south. Let's grab some quick phone calls before the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Myad in New York. You're up first on Coast to Coast. Say hi to Jay Widener.
Yes, good evening, rather good morning, gentlemen. Very, very great, very much of a great show. I have a two-parter, and my comment is I think we're in for a really rough ride before we get to the Maunder Minimum. But I'd like him to... I like if he knows about Professor Dr. Rick Strassman's work, who wrote a book. I can't remember the exact title, but he did experiments with students and people who participated in taking the DMT, you know, that molecule.
The spirit molecule.
Yeah, the spirit molecule, right.
Right, naturally, but they can ramp it up in terms of some... psychoactive delivery. And the second part of the question is, Jay, are you familiar with, I can't remember his full name, but one name is Percival, and he wrote a book called Thinking and Destiny. And I haven't picked it up recently. It's quite a very thick tome. But I remember reading about elementals and a lot of things along the lines of what you seem to be getting at. And I think he also wrote Democracy of Self. So that's my two questions. I'll listen over the air And thank you so much for your work.
Yeah, thank you for the two great questions. Rick Strassman, the spirit molecule. Now, okay, Jay, I do want your comments on that because I haven't taken DMT. Let me just be straight out. But I've certainly spoken to enough people that have, and I've read a lot about it. But it's tapping into a parallel world, another dimension, where all of this stuff is going on.
I agree. And what's happening with DMT and why it's so interesting is for some reason the DMT, dimethyltryptamine, which is very close to serotonin in this molecular form, when serotonin is, of course, associated with light, and light is associated with these plasma beings, it would appear to me as if taking DMT under certain kinds of circumstances — I do not recommend people take DMT, it's a very, very powerful drug — they can apparently see these plasma beings, these things that are around us all the time that we can't see. They suddenly become apparent under these circumstances.
It's research that I think that science has an opportunity to clinically, in a lab, in a controlled setting, try to figure out what's going on. And I'll tell you why. When it comes to ayahuasca and DMT, the experiences, Jay, as you know, are the same all around the world. People that have never talked to each other describe the exact same beings and people and things and snakes, whatever it is, and the geometric descriptions of their surroundings are identical. They're going to another dimension, one that is real.
They are, and again, it's this dimension that surrounds us, this cloud of plasma. So you are a plasma being, Jimmy, and I am too.
Sure.
And our brain is a plasma, and we think, and our brain thinks as a plasma. And when we die, our plasma being, which weighs 21 grams, leaves your body and goes back up into the plasma cloud, where your memories become etched into this kind of record, this plasmic record that's being kept. And this plasma cloud is huge. I mean, and if you want to see these beings, they're easy to see. Just Google or YouTube space shuttle tether experiment and look at the tether experiment that they did with the space shuttle in the 90s, where they put the copper wire out of the space shuttle, and it gathered up so much electricity that it almost blew out the space shuttle. That's another story for another time. But if you watch the video that they took, you can see these plasma beings gathering around this electrical wire. They love electricity and wires, and that's why you always see UFOs on, you know, electrical wire lines and that kind of thing.
Let's I'm going to do this right before the break, just because I'm going to go to Jeff in Port Townsend, Washington. Jeff, say hi to Jay.
Hey Jay, how's it going? It's Jeff Eichen.
Jeff Eichen, how you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm really blessed and proud that you're out there. I've been watching some Anthony Bourdain, and to have you on board makes me so proud that you're pushing the envelope.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Do you have any questions for Jay?
I'm curious about about it. You just started to talk about plant medicine, and with the surge in the popularity of it, what about ending prohibition and bringing plants to America and microdosing?
Oh, there you go. Thank you for that, Jeff. Jay, I'll hand that off to you.
Well, I'm not going to recommend, you know, anybody do drugs or anything like that. There's ways to interact with these beings, which doesn't require drugs, as you experienced on Mount Adams there.
Sure.
And so I think you have to go to sacred spots, and you actually kind of have to groove with the area, and then they just appear. I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah. My thing is, I don't know about specific CE5 protocols and if that works for groups out there, individuals, that's fine. My thing is the opposite approach. Jay, you know me. I'm loud. I like to be the center of attention. I want to be the noisiest guy in the room. And when I'm doing night vision, that's I'm out there having fun. I'm not out there to be melancholy and get into a group meditation to call these crafts in. I'm the opposite, and they have responded to that. And I can't explain what I am seeing. I just know that nobody else has told me that they exist, you know, like the government. I don't know what's going on.
Well, another thing that you should do, actually, is turn your iPhone on to 60 or 120 frames a second. And then, you know, shoot around you, and then later look at that slowed down into 20 seconds. And I tell you what, you're going to be surprised at what you see, and I advise everyone to do this, because once you do it, you'll find that these things are all around you. You just can't see them. And it becomes kind of ridiculous that we're not talking about these things all the time. And I have friends who go out in the woods and, you know, turn their cameras on to 120 frames and go back home at the end of the day, and they look, and they're like all over the place, these strange orbs, and they seem to have sentience, and they seem to have, I don't know, they seem to really like human beings.
They do. They do.
Pay attention to them.
You know, when I used to listen, 10 years ago, people talking about this kind of stuff, I didn't pay it much attention. I was too into the UFO hypothesis, you know, the original theories. And now today, it is so much fun to go out there and hang out and see these things. I can't put it into words. It's really extraordinary.
It is. It's one of my favorite things to do. And the more that you see them, the more they appear. It's the strangest thing of all. And so I'm totally convinced that we have this, like, symbiotic relationship with these critters. I don't know what to call them. And that they want us to succeed in some way. I'm not sure exactly what that way is.
Well, you know, I just got email. We got to head towards a break. I just got email that came in. Somebody says they have proof that you're 390 years old. I'm just letting you know, Jay. Our guest tonight, Jay Widener. Now, when we come back, we're going into the Secret Space Program and Stanley Kubrick. Yes, the dots have been connected. Our guest is Jay Widener. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Stay with us. Welcome back. Our guest tonight, Jay Widener. When we come back, I'm just going to say this. If you haven't seen it, go and check out Kubrick's Odyssey. You can go to sacredmysteries.com. You can go to jaywidener.com. You need to go and chase that down. It's one of the great documentaries. When I come back, I'm going to tell Jay how many times I've watched it this year. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter at jchurchradio. I've got some questions lined up right here. Just post at Jay Church Radio. And if it's good, I'll read it right here on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Jay Widener. Now, Jay, this is what I do. And Rita always knows when this is happening. I'll show up. I'll have the bowl of popcorn. I'll have a couple of drinks. And I'll say, honey, and she'll go, all right, it's Kubrick's Odyssey night. I said, yes, it is. And we go through it again. It's just an amazing documentary. Jay, are you there?
I am. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
And this is what I mean by that, though, Jay, is it is so to the point and so direct. But also, if you're a Kubrick fan or if you've watched any of his stuff or know anything about him, it's almost too out there. But once you watch it and you watch it over again, you realize how on point it really is. Then you go back and you watch The Shining or watch other things, and you are nearly distracted scene to scene. I'm counting actors now, right? I'm looking at T-shirts. I'm looking at the number 11 in the background. I see the eagle. You know what I mean? I see it everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yes.
It really is. And by the way, Kubrick's Odyssey 3 is going to be coming out. I'm working on it right now, and it's got a bunch of new stuff, which is going to blow everybody away. Right now, I'm in the middle of trying to find, and I have somebody who says they're going to help me here, a film detective in Hollywood who claims that he may have found the 24 missing minutes from Eyes Wide Shut. So hopefully that'll be part of Kubrick's Odyssey 3.
I'm wearing a Secret Space Program T-shirt right now that a friend of mine brought over from England and gave to me at Contact in the Desert. Secret Space Program is what this community is talking about right now. And your connecting of the dots back to Kubrick and the Apollo missions are direct. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah. So the theory of the Secret Space Program is that after World War II, the Americans and the Russians discovered that the Germans, their so-called enemy, had been working on some anti-gravity machines, and that they took those anti-gravity machines, and with the power of the United States military industrial complex, we turned those into like supersonic, incredible aircraft, spacecraft that could go from here to the moon and from here to Mars in a few minutes, and bending space and all that. And if you look at the evidence, you do actually see that there was all this talk about zero gravity and anti-gravity all the way up until like late 1955, when everything just went silent. And I believe, of course, that Kennedy knew about, I know he knew about all this, the zero gravity craft that we had perfected, possibly with alien technology. And when he said that he wanted NASA to get to the moon by the end of the decade, he knew they couldn't with regular rocketry. Wernher von Braun had already written a book about how it'd take a rocket the size of the Empire State Building to get there. So he already knew they couldn't get there with conventional rocketry, and he knew they had the real technology, and he wanted it out because it meant free energy and the ability to travel around without causing pollution and these kinds of things, thinking that this was a trick he was pulling, and it didn't work. And that's really the crux of my theory, and that they had to get him out of the way. And this all occurred around the summer of 1963, when they had seen, that is the people involved with NASA and the military industrial complex, when they had seen, of course, Dr. Strangelove, and they'd seen the scenes with the B-52 flying over Siberia, which looked totally realistic, but was really a technique called front screen projection, which Stanley was using, Kubrick, who made Dr. Strangelove.
Right.
And that's when the whole thing coalesced. They decided that they would off Kennedy and then get Kubrick to become the director of the moon landings, and use the money that they were procreating, the money that they were taking into the space program that they actually weren't using, and use it to fund the Secret Space Program, which would be built with zero-G machines. And that was all going on in this time period of 1964 to later, all the way to now. But it all started then. And so what Kubrick did was he created kind of the psychological, mythological idea that we could use rockets and things to get all the way to the moon and back, to hide the fact that, of course, we had this superior equipment that we procured from the Germans. Interestingly enough, Kubrick's entire second family, the family that he did not live with in the United States, but that he married into when he moved to England, was all upper-class Germans who had actually were Hitler supporters during the war. So it's very strange that this Jewish filmmaker would, you know, have a family of Germans who probably knew all that I'm telling you and more. So Kubrick has this curious relationship with the very fathers of the Secret Space Program. He also rubbed shoulders, of course, with the screenwriter of 2001: A Space Odyssey, Arthur C. Clarke, who, of course, knew everybody in the Secret Space Program also. And if you actually examine the plot of 2001, you realize that it is, in fact, a secret mission that goes, the Discovery mission in 2001 Space Odyssey is actually a secret mission. What they're really going to do has nothing to do with what they're telling the public. So again, over and over, Kubrick is telling us that there's these weird things going on. Clockwork Orange is about mind control. Full Metal Jacket is about the control of the individual through mass control, mind control. And Eyes Wide Shut is about occult rich people running the world. And over and over, we see that Kubrick is interwoving this kind of idea that there's these secret groups doing things that are seem mysterious, but when you examine them, you realize that he's really telling you about. Like, take The Shining, for instance. In The Shining, we have a place that is inhabited by evil spirits, which invade you when you inhabit that area. And again, this goes back to these kind of plasma beings. Some of them are not good, and they inhabit places that are where bad things happened. And The Shining sub-story is, of course, about that. So over and over, we see that Kubrick is, in fact, I believe, the most intelligent filmmaker that ever lived, because he wasn't afraid to tackle some very, very serious subjects and in a big-time way. And I could go on for hours about it.
Well, you bring up a really good point, which is this, that it's not that we didn't go to the moon. We just didn't go to the moon the way that they told us. And that's a very important point. And the astronauts that were involved in the Apollo program, what they were told is maybe not necessarily the truth. And in 2001, the astronauts on that mission did not know about the mission. They thought that they were flying to Jupiter for something else. They didn't realize everything until HAL broke down.
That's exactly right, and that's a very salient point, which everyone seems to miss. Also, at the beginning of the film, or not beginning, but, you know, about a half hour into the film, we discover that the space program people are creating cover stories, that there's a virus loose at the base on the moon. And so, you know, he also is pointing out the fact that these people are not going to hide from trying to create cover stories to hide what's really going on. And what's the cover story that they're creating? What is it hiding? They're hiding the fact that they found intelligent life or proof of intelligent life in the past on the lunar surface. So again, we see that Kubrick is telling us that they may have found proof of intelligent life in the past on the moon, and they're hiding it from us. And I believe that's exactly what's going on.
And I find one of the most fascinating parts of the movie has now come full circle in the past couple of weeks, which is this. The original screenplay, the original draft of the book, had the Discovery mission going to Saturn. Kubrick couldn't make the rings of Saturn, allegedly, right, good enough for the film. So they switched it to Jupiter and Europa, right? Okay. Well, what happened 2 weeks ago? NASA just had their big press conference. Oceans of Europa could be teeming with life. And it turns out Arthur C. Clarke and Kubrick had it right all along. Now, either they knew it back in the 60s, and that wasn't an accident, or Arthur C. Clarke is indeed the greatest science fiction writer of all time.
I would say that is like a great point, by the way. And I would say that it was that they had discovered something very odd on the moon of Saturn, Iapetus, and somehow Clarke had found out about it. I believe that they had already sent probes out to Saturn and probably beyond, yes, by 1964, 65. And I think that they knew about a whole lot of things, and they were feeding it back to Clarke because he was one of their dudes. And he wrote about it, and he put it into the book, 2001 A Space Odyssey. Did not make it to the movie, but in the book, he goes to this very bizarre moon of Saturn called Iapetus, that is Bowman, the astronaut, which is where he encounters the monolith. He does not encounter it in the orbit of Jupiter.
That's right.
He encounters it on the surface of the moon, Iapetus, circling Saturn, which is bizarre beyond belief.
And I want to touch upon this as much as I can. I talk about this all the time, Jay, and certainly with you too. Arthur C. Clarke, to talk about the moons of Saturn, especially in 1963, where this scientific data just wasn't there, and Europa, and oceans, and gravity that is keeping these oceans warm, and the possibility of this was way out there. But here we are in 2018, and this is exactly what we're sending probes now to go and research. That's way beyond coincidence.
It is very curious, and I think it can only be explained by my theory about there being this nascent space program that we did not know about, and that Clarke was getting fed the information. And we have to understand that Clarke was not, you know, a nobody. He actually came up with the idea for the first, you know, geocentric satellite. It's not like he wasn't like somebody well admired by the space community. And he was Stanley Kubrick's doorway into this whole thing, I believe. And, you know, he was rubbing shoulders with Hermann Oberth and Werner von Braun.
All of them.
All the big people, the Germans that were coming over, helping with Operation Paperclip and the space program and all of that. And I think that, you know, he was feeding the younger Kubrick all this knowledge, and Kubrick was trying to figure out a way to get it out without anyone realizing that he was getting it out. I think he would be surprised how quickly the esoteric knowledge that he placed into his films got out. I think he thought it was going to take 50 years or so before anyone would catch on to what was happening. But I think that with his sudden death after Eyes Wide Shut was shot, that everyone kind of got wise that there might be something here we didn't see, and they all started looking.
Now, I wanted to mention that, and before we get out of here, and if we run out of time, I want to thank you for hanging out with me once again. Always a great conversation. But Kubrick, yeah, thank you so much. Kubrick is my favorite director. He's probably the most taught in film school. That's where you start. It's like Kubrick 101 for any aspiring director and filmmaker. But the last picture, Eyes Wide Shut, for Kubrick to go through all of those stages of great films to end with Eyes Wide Shut, there was clearly, probably more so than any other film that he had ever done, he was trying to get that final point across. What was that point?
Well, the point is that, you know, there is a very wealthy secret society that controls our world. And he brushed on the edges of it, I believe. He may have even attended the parties that were very similar to the Eyes Wide Shut parties. We now know that these parties actually truly existed. The Rothschilds and several other people would throw these parties where people would dress up as animals in different kinds of costumes. And so we now know that all that's real, and it's been real for a long, long time. It should be pointed out, by the way, that the mansion where the so-called orgy takes place in Eyes Wide Shut was a former mansion owned by the Rothschilds. So Kubrick even chose a mansion in the movie that was part of this whole milieu. So I think what we see is that, you know, and he's saying that you don't mess with them, you know.
Are you saying that the scene where Tom Cruise gets dropped off in the cab, right, and he walks through the gates, that house was a Rothschild house?
It was. It was owned by Jacob Rothschild.
Well, that's that's like 10 shades of creepy.
Yeah, and also if you the music that's used in the orgy is the Catholic Mass played backwards.
That's right. That I didn't know.
Extremely revealing.
Now,
think about it.
And we've got to get out of here, but I want to stay on this Eyes Wide Shut thing. There were a lot of production notes as I studied the film, as you have, that this wasn't the final cut, and he never got a chance to do the right audio, and that quite possibly the music, it just wasn't Stanley's version of the movie. What do you say about that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think what I've heard is, I know from insiders, that about a half hour was cut out of the movie that we see. But even more interesting is that about 10 minutes of what I can only call BS was added, I guess, to fatten it up a little bit. So there's this whole periods of the movie that exists that are really boring and useless, and they just, it would appear to me, they just stuck it in to for no reason at all. But then there's these huge continuity errors that are just no way that a guy as meticulous as Stanley Kubrick could have made these incredible continuity errors. And so that's right where something is cut out, is when we see these continuity errors. And what was cut out, from what I heard, and I heard it from a very good source, was essentially Tom Cruise discovering an MK Ultra program.
That's right.
Involving his wife.
That's right. That's right. Woman. That's exactly right. And just a great film. And I do have to get out of here, Jay, but I want to remind everybody, it's jaywidener.com, sacredmysteries.com. All of those links are over at coasttocoastam.com. Jay, don't change. You're the absolute best. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Jay Widener. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back with Jason Martell. Stay with us.